Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm ready. Right foot back.
Begins with a U. It ends with an A. Has a meal dish out there.
Monday Night Raw, number one. All right.
Welcome, everyone, to the Cultaholic Classic Raw Review. You see, as the other Cultaholic lads are priming themselves for SummerSlams and takeovers, we are here via the Ica Pro-powered DeLorean, holding out for a hero. Somebody to guide us through what is going to be a turgid new generation era. And who be we? I be Fake Geordie, radio presenter without portfolio, former Cultaholic heavyweight champion Tom Campbell. I am with the bear in the big blue bar cage, the head pen of Cultaholic, the man that does not require a pencil for such endeavours. He would show future endeavours to pencils. He needs a pen because he gets it right every time. He is Titan Shrugged himself, Justin Henry from Off of America.
It's all downhill from here, Tom.
Mate, we're on a slippery slope on this watch along, aren't we?
it's not going to get any better. It really isn't.
Do you know what? I love the fact that this is how we are starting the podcast, with us just going, It's not getting any better from here.
Yeah, it's just a reminder to abandon hope, all ye who continue through, and those who don't wish to abandon hope, turn back now.
So this is where myself and Justin Henry will get together to talk a little bit. If this is the first time you are here, this is where Justin Henry and I get together to talk a little bit about wrestling from a bygone era, i.e. the new generation era. But before we get into that, and Justin, I've not even prepped you that I'm doing this bit. Before we get into that, we've teamed up with Audible to offer a free audiobook for all Cultaholic listeners, available now from cultaholic.com/audible. You could choose from some recent titles like JR's Under the Black Hat, stuff like Glenn Jacobs' Mayor Kane book. The Death of WCW is one of the greatest wrestling books outside of the Titan series that I have ever read, and you can now hear it via the power of Audible. Or if you want to find out more about the world of Puro Wrestling, Eggshells, Pro Wrestling in the Tokyo Dome is available there now as well. Simply sign up to a free 30-day trial and make your selection. You can cancel anytime you like. There's no commitment to stick around. Even if you cancel, you still get to keep the book. Pretty cool situation. Cultaholic.com/audible.
Please tell me Death of WCW is read by Brian. Table of contents. Anyway.
It's read by Meltzer. No, it's
copyright 2014.
It's Meltzer.
2014.
The ISBN code on the back. Amazing. Cultaholic.com/audible. But we're not on our own this week, are we, Justin Henry?
No. Here to share the pain with us is Cultaholic Discord moderator and all around swell gal, Sydney Zumowitz.
Hello. I accept that I come after the ad. All good.
There is a hierarchy here.
There is, unfortunately. The hierarchy goes me, Justin, money, Sydney.
Although in fairness, Sid did do the audio read for which book did you do? Was it The Hobbit?
Sure, why not? I did do an audiobook reading of Junie B. Jones, though. I did do that for first graders. It was my senior project.
Oh, can we buy that anywhere?
It's on YouTube.
She also read for Jose Canseco's Juiced and O.J. Simpson's If I Did It.
It's on YouTube, Tom.
Amazing. Not on cultaholic.com/audible.
No, unfortunately.
Okay, that's fine. But hey, sign up today. You don't have to keep it. So let's crack on with this week's episode of Monday Night Raw. We have been chronologically critiquing
every
single episode of Monday Night Raw. Yes, we must, Justin Henry. Where and when are we for Monday Night Raw this week, Justin?
Well, the air date was Monday, December 5th, 1994. This was taped 1 week earlier at the Mid-Hudson Civic Center in beautiful, scenic Poughkeepsie, New York.
Well, what we see in Poughkeepsie is fans, something that WWF may struggle with. And there is a worrying sign of times ahead. And this comes from the Wrestling Observer, from Dave Meltzer, who says, quote, "I don't know if all the weekend house shows scheduled for Nova Scotia and New Brunswick were cancelled due to a lack of advances. Bob versus Diesel was top, although Bob is apparently injured. But some of them were. The rest of the crew, headlined by Luger versus Tatanka, were in Israel, Germany, and England. So if the top guys weren't there for this show, who the flippin' heck was on the books?
Well, keep in mind, it is Nova Scotia. No offense to extreme eastern Canada, but it's not really a major market.
Extreme Eastern Canada, or as it was known before 1994, Eastern Canada.
That's right. And that was before Shane Douglas threw down the moose and declared that we are extreme.
So, read
John,
into,
good luck with that one.
Read into what you will for shows being cancelled around the WWF at this point. Talking of wrestlers being away, there is one reportedly coming in from Dave Meltzer. Word is that Chris Candido will head into WWF after he finishes up in Smoky Mountain Wrestling, which seems confirmed by him doing angles on TV.
Chris, stay away. Do not come here. For your own good, do not come here.
Run for your life, Chris Candido.
Don't do it, Skip. I mean, Chris.
It's also very likely that Tammy Fitch will be used as an announcer rather than his manager at this point.
If only.
Yeah,
That's a bit of a mixed bag when all that takes place.
That is still to come. Candido, and this will make you balk, Justin. Candido was choosing between the WWF and All Japan.
Oh, my God. We could have had Candido versus Akira Taue.
We didn't get that. We got Chris Candido versus Barry Horowitz instead. So I think the universe
won.
That's
basically the same thing. Well, Sid, Horowitz won, but we'll get to that.
Sid, are you familiar with the work of Chris Candido?
I am not.
Justin Sell said on Chris Candido.
Chris Candido was an incredible technician from right here in New Jersey. He was the common law boyfriend, husband, whatever. They weren't actually married, but to Tammy Sitch, the eventual Sonny. They came into WWF as the Body Donnas in 1995, Skip and Sonny. And go figure, she was the more over one of the two because she was a beautiful blonde in a very tight gym outfit. She eventually went off on her. She was also very charismatic and knew how to work the crowd. She was great at that. Make no mistake. She wasn't just some random woman they found and says, "Hey, you want to get involved in wrestling?" She knew the business. Mm-hmm. She absolutely did. And unfortunately, Candido's tenure in WWF, even though he had one tag title reign as part of the Body Donnas with Zip, with aka Dr. Tom Pritchard, it didn't end well in WWF for him. He left later in 96, which we'll definitely get to that when it comes up. And Sonny continued to be famous for a little while longer, and then eventually she became infamous.
Ah, all right. So not a super long run for Candido.
No, unfortunately. He didn't get to show his stuff because of A, his stupid gimmick, and B, he was tucked deep in the undercard.
Gotcha.
His height may have had something to do with it. He was about maybe 5'8" on, even on lifts. But he was one hell of a technician and could work the crowd. It's a shame.
So there you go. Meanwhile, in World Championship Wrestling, it appears that Steve Austin may be out of action for a long time, as long as 8 months to a year. Austin has suffered a knee injury, and as a result of this, he was diagnosed with torn two posterior ligaments. He's going to need major reconstructive surgery, although at press time, we've heard he's getting a second opinion. With the recent departures of Flair and Steamboat, losing Austin absolutely kills the company, says Meltzer, as far as what is left of the possibility of having quality matches. For Austin, however, this could be a blessing in disguise. They were going nowhere with him, and now he is out, and they've got 9 months to figure out a new direction for him. Oh, we'll see what happens with Steve Austin in these 9 months, shall we?
Well, I'll bet he comes back and rekindles the Hollywood Blondes with Pillman, and they have a several-year run, and then he stays in WCW, and it remains big. I'm sure that's what's going to happen with Stunning Steve.
Exactly. I'm sure it will. This is a really crucial moment in the career of Steve Austin. This injury, I think, changed the direction of Steve Austin.
If I may, this wasn't the injury.
Oh, okay.
The injury happens in New Japan in the spring.
Right. So this is...
That's the one.
This is nearly a key moment.
Just about, but basically the writing is on... The writing is on the wall at this point.
Yeah, it's
crossroads
so.
Is there, and very soon the game is going to change completely. And we just don't know it yet.
Find out more about that as we get closer to it. But those are just the highlights. It's a bit of a quiet week in the world of professional wrestling. So with that in mind, let's throw it over to Justin Henry as myself and Sydney Somerwitz sit cross-legged on the story mat. And Justin Henry talks us through this week's episode of Monday Night Raw.
Not just any Raw, Tom, but Monday Night Raw sponsored by Tyco.
Oh, yes!
Which, as Vince informs us during the opening montage, Raw sponsored by Tyco. And no, with such toys as Matchbox Cars and Dr. Dreadful. Now, I know Matchbox Cars. They've been around for decades, but I have never heard of Dr. Dreadful.
I wasn't sure on what Dr. Dreadful is either. And the only thing I can find is a board game. But Tyco did electronic stuff, so I didn't know whether it was connected with that.
I just found the Dr. Dreadful Zombie Lab with Candy and Drink Maker.
That sounds like it might have been Tyco Electronics, doesn't it?
I was 11 years old when this would have come out. I've never heard of this.
Sort of feels like a Halloween version of Mr. Frosty.
Kind of, yes. I was still kind of watching like cartoons at this point, although I was growing out of them. But I have no recollection of this whatsoever. Thankfully, we have a blessing here. Shawn Michaels is here to do commentary. Because Shawn, even if he's possibly hungover, which I think he was good here, he was hungover on a previous commentary appearance, we think. But Shawn makes every even a bad show good just by riffing and saying whatever's on his mind and kind of just being Shawn.
There's a couple of moments in this, though, I would say, where he's a bit detrimental.
Just a couple?
Just a couple.
Shawn was kind of like a barometer, though. When he, if he didn't like something, he would let you know it. Mm-hmm. And he was probably right. In that sense, he kind of spoke for the audience.
Yeah, but thing is, this is what I come down on JR and Tony Schiavone for on AEW right now, is that when they don't like something, you know about it, just judging by the way that they talk about it.
Well, I do see that point, but I would rather have that than Tom Phillips and Byron Saxton and Michael Cole speaking in catchphrases speaking in buzz phrases for... in 2 or 3 hours of show.
Agreed.
You see, I like it when people try and put the stuff over. Call me old fashioned.
Well, there's putting something over, so there's selling something, and then there's being a robot. And Sean,
and they're
least,
robots.
Yes, they're human emergency brakes are what they are. Sean is the precise opposite of that. Perhaps too much the opposite of that. I mean, it isn't quite the time where Sean was on commentary and called Sid Samson Knight, not our Sid, but Sid Vicious, called him Samson Knight because he's the biggest piece of luggage in wrestling, because you have to carry him through everything.
That's a good line, so that is, to be fair.
It's probably factual, but I mean, it's not that counterproductive is what I'm saying. So Sean's here, he pushes Vince aside, takes over on the mic, this is the way it should be. Can't believe this is a WrestleMania match in 11 years. Vince and Sean. Would you have ever guessed?
That is a horrifying thought, and it didn't dawn on me until you said it just then.
Both future world champions, by the way. And then Sean segues into the intro for Double J, Jeff Jarrett. Our feature match this week is Jeff Jarrett versus the British Bulldog, Davey Boy Smith. Sadly, no Bulldog promo. That would have made the show 5 stars as far as I'm concerned. But Jarrett's not alone this week. We have kind of an understated debut on the show, Tommy and Sid.
Yep.
We've got some random-ass dude in sunglasses and a bandana kind of trailing Jarrett. Vince admonishes the camera crew for putting some cable puller on there by mistake. They think he's just some staffer. So Vince just tore Kevin Dunn a new one on the air, which he should do more often. So apparently this is just some innocuous crew member. So we are led to believe. But who cares about that? Because we have the Rockets' red glare of the Bulldogs intro. Thomas' favorite part, is it not?
I'm annoyed that he keeps doing the Rockets' red glare. Flare, even.
With a dumb shoom effects for the pyrotechnics. Tom just hates us.
It's because it's wrong. Like, the Rockets' red whatever isn't from anything English. It's from America. It's from America songs. It's nothing to do with the UK.
Fireworks are cool.
No, but it's the way Vince says the Rockets' red glare.
For the British Bulldog.
For the British Bulldog. It would be like Bret the Hitman Hart coming out to America the Beautiful.
Well, his mom's American.
Yeah, but then you could. Don't play that game with me.
Tom,
do not play that game with me.
I have had up to here with your blatant jingoism.
Oh.
I'll have you know, I'm really good at jingoism. I can pull out those blocks and the tower doesn't fall down.
That's not what I've said.
Is that not Jingo?
No, Jingo was not its name-o. So, we have... Sid, you going to make it through this show? I lost my spot. Anyway... Yes, Jared has tinsel hanging off his tights, or as Vince says, tinsel hanging off the obliques. Which may be the first time that those five words were ever said in that sequence, in that precise sequence. So Jared takes control early. It's just your basic TV match. You know how the ebbs and the flows of this stuff goes by now. Jared dominates for a bit, then Bulldog overpowers him. He hip tosses Jared over. And then he does his own version of the Jarrett strut. Which looks like he's walking like a rooster or something. It's amazing. We need more of British Bulldog co-opting other people's taunts. So Sean starts bitching about the camera shots, which means he is the voice of the audience. What's this Raw Underground thing? Like, why are we cutting back and forth? It's not a movie. And then, speaking of camera shots, it's funny because Sean was complaining about it. Because seconds later, Vince is talking, and the camera is basically like right on the commentary desk, and Vince is sitting right there, his lips not moving at all.
Yeah, always stuff like that tends to throw it off for me.
Maybe we need more camera cuts in order to avoid showing Vince's mug there. And that's when Vince finally realizes... This deep into the match, or maybe a few minutes in, as this unnamed crew member is basically shielding Jarrett from the fans when Jarrett gets knocked to the outside, that this guy must be in Jarrett's corner. It took him this long to put it together.
He walked out with him.
Right, but Vince was just some cable puller. Just roaming the aisleway, doomed for eternity to do crew work on this show. And that's when Vince sneaks into the line. I'm not too sure Double J has any fans. No, he's got them there. Well, I mean, he's right. Name a Jeff Jarrett fan who's not from Tennessee. See, you can't do it. We should take a poll. Are you a Jeff Jarrett fan?
Oh, that's good point.
Tom, are you a Jeff Jarrett fan?
Fair point, well made.
Bulldog hits the delayed vertical. This unnamed individual once more keeps the fans away from Jarrett. This just goes on for a little bit. There's a lot of spotlighting of this man and has a backstage pass sticker on his upper back. And they keep cutting to him. He's not really doing much other than just standing there, peering through his sunglasses.
It's a good look.
It is. It's he's kind of mysterious behind these shades. It makes you wonder if he's somebody important, perhaps. But turns out he will be important one day. But for right now, he's just, should we call him a roadie?
He is
I
the roadie.
I think you better call somebody.
Whoa, nice.
See, she's been watching old stuff. She's learning. So, match continues on. Vince references the Santa Claus, which really dates the show, although that was a pretty good movie. Jared Hope's a sleeper. Sean St. Bulldog slept through Survivor Series. I wrote lucky him. Jared Bulldog's the Bulldog, leading to the obvious puns. Then Bulldog pulls out the crappiest perfect plex of all time.
Points for effort, though. Points for effort.
And then Sean has to quip, "That move never beats anybody, Vin Man."
He's such an ass. He really is.
It's still pretty funny, though.
Oh, it's funny. He's just an ass.
Bulldog makes the comeback. Jared tries to bail, but Bulldog fetches him. See what I did there?
Mm-hmm.
In the true impressive moment of this match, Bulldog press slams Jared back in through the ropes. He goes to get back in, but he can't because somebody under the ring has his foot. It's not Hornswoggle, it's Dog Swoggle. Because the roadie's slid underneath, hooked the foot, Bulldog can't get in. Referee counts Bulldog out while he's standing up next to the ring. And that's your finish. Jarrett wins via countout, and Bulldog barely seems fazed by this turn of events.
He's not bothered. He's still concussed, isn't he, from the other week?
He might be. Oh, the bloody ring elf hooked me shoe.
Sharon! Aussie Bulldog.
Well, Ozzy was in this corner at Mania, too.
He was, yeah.
Vince Bulldogs forever!
All aboard the crazy train!
Diary of a bad promo.
So I've got some bits on the roadie to talk about.
Okay, well.
So, the fire. Well, what we believe to be who is ringside right now for Jeff Jarrett. This is the debut of, indeed, the roadie, Brian James Armstrong, who made his in-ring debut in 86, beating Kevin Sullivan in his in-ring debut, which is a bit of a turn of events.
Nepotism.
Yeah, I know, right? He enlisted in the U.S. Marine Corps the following year, so he put his wrestling dreams on hold. Between 91 and 94, he wrestled between tours of duty in WCW and Smoky Mountain Wrestling, but because of his wild inconsistency with wrestling, nothing really became of him other than becoming a sort of a well-respected job guy. He worked in Smoky Mountain as the Dark Secrets, and there is an iconic match on the WWE Network from WCW Power Hour in 94, which sees Brian James Armstrong in a losing effort to Terror Rising. It is Road Dogg versus Triple H from 1994 WCW. That is for your eyes right now on the network. Whilst WCW and Smoky Mountain only ever saw him as like an enhancement guy, as we say, WWF saw something a little bit more after he beat Barry Hardy in a dark match in August of this particular year. And he was signed to a full-time deal. Now, there were plans to bring his brother in, Steve Armstrong, as a singing cowboy.
Well, thankfully, they kept that on ice in case one of the other Armstrongs wanted to do it.
Well, that was it, because Steve Armstrong didn't end up doing, obviously, that gimmick, but had said to WWF officials, "Hey, my brother's got a hell of a singing voice. His name's Brian. You should look him up." And that is what led to Brian coming in, not taking the singing cowboy gimmick, sadly, but instead coming in as part of Jeff Jarrett's ensemble with something that may lead to singing down the line, it seems.
Yes, it's I mean, certainly out of the four Armstrong brothers, Brian had the most charisma. I don't think anybody's going to deny that. He definitely got his father's mic skills.
The general consensus is that he is the least talented wrestler, but the most charismatic of them all.
I would agree with that. Mm-hmm. although he was fine in the ring. He wasn't terrible in the ring by any means. In fact, he'll have the best match at next year's King of the Ring by a country mile. And that, although that's not saying much. Yeah, that match between him and Terror Rising Triple H is a trip because Road Dogg has a perm and Hunter has hair like freaking Conan the Barbarian. And it feels like it's almost like watching Southpaw Regional Wrestling where they're playing characters.
A little bit, yeah.
Like Hunter shows up, hi, I'm Terror Rising. It's like, oh, that's a name you come up with for a bad bit or something. And it turns out he was doing it for his career. Sid, what did you think of Jeff Jarrett and the British Bulldog?
I thought it was the best on the show. I really did think it was a pretty good match, and I thought I just enjoyed it, and I also loved Sean on commentary, and I loved when Vince was talking about Diesel, and every time it was like the World Wrestling Federation champion Diesel, and Sean just goes, "You don't have to say it every time."
Oh, you're sowing the seeds for a big showdown down the line.
For sure.
And if anyone could sell this match, it's Sean, because Diesel's going to be very hampered by the fact that he can't cut a Kevin Nash style promo as Diesel. So Sean's got to do the heavy lifting in terms of building the match in that regard. I think Tom would agree with that.
Very much so. Very much so.
Speaking of Diesel, we're coming to him in just a moment. We see Sean just hanging out at the desk with his feet up. Because that's how I do this podcast, really. I just lay back and just throw my feet up and give half a damn.
I can hear it in your voice some days.
Well, it depends on the quality of the show.
It's true.
Holiday wish tour dates. And then we get the American Sportscasters Association dinner. Because we need celebrity rubs more than anything.
But they're Vince-style celebrities is the problem. Like, the Sportscasters Awards tonight, there's Vince going, oh my goodness, look at this, opened by Gerald R. Ford, the new WWF generation.
Well, to be fair, Gerald Ford's a former president, so that's kind of a big deal.
He's an older president, surely.
He's also Homer Simpson's future neighbor.
I mean, that is a more palatable thing for the new generation to bite onto.
We see the Bushwhackers there in tuxedos are licking someone who does not want to be licked. We see Doink and Dink in tuxedos. And here's Diesel in the sleeveless tux, which is the best look of them all.
Diesel ripped the sleeves off his tux before the thing got started.
Oh, that's a classic look for a heavyweight wrestler to do. But here was the kicker for me. They go to all this trouble to make Diesel look as big as possible. He's 7 feet tall. He's a human wrecking machine. He's bigger than everyone. And what do? They show footage of him standing next to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who's taller than him. Now, pardon me one moment while I Google Kareem's height. Because I know in wrestling we exaggerate people's heights, like Adam Cole saying he's more than 5'4". Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, in his playing days, was 7'2". By this point in time, he was 47 years old, so he may have shrank a little bit. If he's 7'2 here, well, Diesel ain't more than 6'9 or 6'10. That might be a bit problematic.
Yeah, a little bit. A little. That was, yeah, I can see that being an issue.
I mean, they would never show Andre next to someone that was taller than him. They made a point never to do that.
No, you have to be so careful. If you're going to build somebody as 6 foot, then you got to make sure, like, there's this, like, Adam Cole is billed as 6 foot. And then there's a picture of him stood next to legitimately 6 foot Zack Sabre Jr. And it's like, one of you's lying, or one of you is in the foreground, and the other's in the background.
Yes, you go to Six Flags, there's Adam Cole sulking by the rides because he can't get on. I mean, I can tell us how tall he is, but if you're saying he's 6 foot and he's clearly at least 5 inches shorter than that, then that's a slight exaggeration, maybe. it's such a size conscious business, and Head Diesel next to freaking Kareem. Like, and Kareem's famous. He was one of the best players of the 70s and early 80s. He's taller than Diesel. Let's ignore that. Let's move on. Here's Diesel with Mary Lou Retton, who is 4'8". Look how tall Kevin is. They should have done that instead. Here's Diesel with Herb Villachaise from Fantasy Island. That was Tattoo. I realize that that's a very obscure reference, especially for Sid here, who is maybe born 20 years after Fantasy Island was a show. Oh, you know who Tattoo is.
All the things she said, all the things she said running through my head.
Oh, I know that.
Oh, you too.
They're a good band as well.
They are.
Well, yes, they did Victoria's theme song.
They did. Who, you too?
No. They did The Beautiful Day, which was Hunter's workout song.
Tattoo.
No, Fat Two was the guy who ran over Awesome.
Urikishi.
Yes. No, Hakushi's the guy who's debuting soon.
Taz.
Taz? No. No, Jazz was the woman who won the women's title in 2002 from Trish.
From Tattoo.
We're in a circle.
Yes, Tattoo was from Fantasy Island. See? Now you know.
The more you know.
The less you care.
At least we come to the.
Took long enough. Now we come to the other passable match on this show. The 1-2-3 Kid versus Barry Horowitz. Future Survivor Series opponents. I would have believed you in 94. Because that's where we were headed. So Kid gets in his usual opening flurry. But Horowitz makes his comeback as Kid will, because Kid is very giving. Horowitz gets a lot of offense in here, including this great butterfly suplex. And it's funny that you mention Chris Candido in the preamble here, because Horowitz hooks Kid with the three-quarter Nelson, gets two off of it. But that might become a finish later.
Oh, noted.
Mm-hmm. So Horowitz is out wrestling Kid here, running next snap, because apparently this is Kurt Hennig moveset night. After the imperfect plex earlier.
Nice.
Horowitz is just dominating this match.
He gets a lot in, doesn't he? Like, I feel like if you watch this and assume they're trying to get behind Horowitz in some way.
But at the same time, Kid can take moves from people because he's the underdog anyway, so. Mm-hmm. If anyone's going to sell for an underneath guy, might as well be Kid. Especially since he can bump and he's willing to do so. So Kid comes back with two spinning heel kicks. Sean works in the phrase chin music, possibly for the first time ever.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because I thought, oh, little reference there, chin music.
Mm-hmm. Sean actually got it from baseball, if you can believe it.
Who said it in baseball?
Well, according to his book, it was a pitcher, Roger Clemens, who Sean idolized. He's also a Texas guy. Threw a very high pitch, almost hit a batter, brushed him off the plate. And the commentator said, like, oh, almost got a little chin music there. And Sean liked the way it sounded.
I didn't realize sweet chin music wasn't a thing yet.
Well, it's funny because Sean did the super kick, but at this point, at this point it was his finish. It just wasn't called sweet chin music yet. It was just a super kick.
Okay.
But for the longest time, Sean used the move as a setup move. It was not the finish. It was just something he would do mid-match. It wasn't the game over move yet. He cycled through all these different moves, including a fisherman suplex, the teardrop suplex, a pile driver. He couldn't settle on a finish. And then finally, Razor just tells him one time, just use the kick. It's your best-looking move. And boom, it became his finish.
Oh.
It's like it's right there in front of your eyes the entire time. You're already doing it. Just make it the finish. Thank God for Razor, huh?
Yeah, I'm really glad that Razor piped in with that, because the teardrop wasn't working for me. There was actually another finisher that he showcased tonight.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We'll get to it soon.
What? Well, I know you used a sharpshooter once in 97. It's not that, is it?
Not the sharpshooter.
So anyway, Kidd gets the two spinning heel kicks, finishes Horwitz with a Mahistral cradle. Very nice one, too.
Yeah, I liked it. And it was that super kick was a nice little finisher for Sean Waltman.
Yeah, I mean, Waltman definitely had he had the athletic ups, had these great kicks in his arsenal. But then he just finishes with kind of it's kind of weird how he kicks Horwitz in the face several times, which should be a knockout. And then he finishes with basically, you know, a backwards small package. Kind of weird, isn't it?
It's an odd one. I'm not against it, though.
Same. Yeah. I liked it.
It's just kids showing off what he can do. Which is fine. So then we abandon all of the good stuff and go on to something that is truly hideous. The promo for next week's episode of Raw. It's bad enough that we have Bob Backlund facing Doink the Clown in the one-on-one match. But this voiceover, I miss Todd Pettengill already. Because even when Todd had to do a bad read for something, like he would add a little bit of gravitas to it and make it sound semi-palatable. Here we have his new co-host on WF Mania, Stephanie Wyand, doing the voiceover.
I thought this sounded like Stephanie McMahon.
It may as well have been.
Yeah.
Stephanie Wyand had no product knowledge by her own admission. She's not even sure why she was hired. She admitted this in Titan Sinking. And it's just... She's literally just like reading words with no emotion. Bob Backlund versus Doink the Clown, and at the tone, the time will be 12 midnight. And she informs us that this match is mischief meets madness, because they love their alliteration.
They really do.
I like how they have this habit of making these matches. They're at least, the one thing that you can't fault with the New Generation era, is that they take these matches that are pretty crap and they will build them up to be so special, and they'll make them. And this is where it comes back to the whole idea of, you know, of them pushing this narrative that may sound like it's forced. And I get that to an extent, but something like this, you know what, if you've got Backlund versus Doink on the show, you may as well try and add a little bit of spice to it. If that's some of the best stuff that you can offer at the moment, and it's a tough sell. I don't know how I feel about Doink versus. If it was Matt Bourne versus Bob Backlund,
that'd be something.
That'd be special, but we know it's not Bourne.
But you are right about how they take these matches that have almost no value, and they make them seem almost main event caliber. Like today, dum 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 dum, Eric of the Viking Raiders. Dum 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 dum, Riddick Moss. Dum 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 dum. It's absurd versus obscure. Dum 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 dum.
Well, I'm watching Raw next week. I don't know about you.
Why? No one else is.
That's not nice.
I saw the numbers. So we cut to this in-game ad for. In-show ad for the Raw video game, which I was very proud to own. I've mentioned many times. Sean is beating up the 1-2-3 Kidd, and he busts out the Mega Move drop kick that knocks Kidd out of the ring.
That's his new finisher. That's the finisher I was saying that he busts out.
Yeah, why didn't Sean do that in an actual match?
Yeah, like beautiful spinning, gravity-defying tornado kick. I bet Cameron Grimes could do that. He does that brilliant cross body in midair. I think Grimes could do that move.
I bet Keith Lee could do it.
Oh, Keith Lee can do anything, mate.
Should have Keith Lee do the flying cannonball that Yoko did on the game that took everybody out in the Rumble.
Oh, could you imagine? You'd never forget about Keith then.
No, you wouldn't. Bask in his glory and this hole in the canvas. And Sean does vow to unveil the move live, but unfortunately he never does.
Oh.
Quang versus Scott Taylor. I feel like we're going in reverse order here.
It's not. No, this is how Raw is done, isn't it? They do this where they start with flipping the best barn burner they can offer, and then we just the squibs get damper as the night goes on. This is how Raw works at the moment.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Well,
I think
yeah.
It's the opposite.
Yeah, exactly. Like, your brain always tells you that the trick is to build to those big matches. So the main event could have been Bulldog versus Jarrett. And it's like, well, no, you're putting that on first, and then everything else is just kind of just ticking along rather than sort of big feeling matches.
Well, it was their way of thinking for many, many years. Going back to Saturday night's main event, I know I've mentioned this on the show before, but since I'll just bring it up again. Saturday night's main event, we usually have about 4 or 5 matches, and the main event almost always went on like second, right around the midnight hour. Because the way the audience would stagger through the night, people would be tuning out by 1 a.m. They'd be tired. So the match at 12:50 in the morning would be like Boris Zukov versus Coco Beware. While Hulk Hogan's defending the belt at like 11:55 p.m., they would stagger because they knew when the audience was going to tune out, that there'd be a drop-off point. And Raw was basically staggered the same way. Put the big match on first at 9 o'clock, because that's when everybody tunes in. Just because, you know, new show coming on, new hour, let's see what's going on. And they figure people are going to tune out anyway, no matter what you put on. Because it's just, you know, it's a school night or people have work in the morning. So at 9:45, you know, you're putting on, you know, Duke Taurasi versus just some local enhancement talent, because who really cares? That's how they looked at it in those days. Mm. And it wasn't until the Monday Night Wars that they started to change up the formula, because we have to hold our audience through the night, because they're putting on Hogan versus Sting and Flair versus Savage on the same night or whatever. You know, we got to do better than the Bushwhackers versus Bum A and Bum B. So, yeah, this Nitro forced their hand. And we'll start seeing that in about a year. So, Quang versus Taylor. Most interesting part of this entire match, well, there's two interesting parts. One is the fan grabbing Quang's cape as he's making his entrance. If Savio had roundhouse, I might have been so happy. Mm-hmm. And then we go on this incredible for 1994 bit where Sean talks about Heidi Fleiss. Heidi Fleiss was a Hollywood madam who was caught up in a prostitution scandal at this point. And they're bringing this up on kid-friendly WWF television. I was amazed. Yeah, I mean, I realize we're probably after 9:30 by now. So, but I mean, I might have still been watching at that point in 94. I may have vaguely heard of Heidi Fleiss through the news. I didn't know what she did. I didn't have any concept of how that stuff worked when I was 11 years old. So it's a little surreal to hear that. But it makes sense that the Sean playing a sleazeball character is going to be someone to bring that kind of thing up. Add a little edge to the show. But here to dilute that edge is this feud between Howard Finkel and Harvey Whippleman. We have a split screen of Harvey bashing Howard during the match, as his company desperately wonders why they're not doing the audiences and that they're hoping for.
I know, it's baffling, isn't it? It's baffling.
Are you saying you're not excited for Harvey versus Howard?
Why? This is the longest running feud I think ever. They just keep pushing this out. We were talking about Harvey versus Howard at WrestleMania. That was in April. This is now like November. Bleak midwinter. Bleakest midwinter.
It is the winter of our discontent. Quang hits his corner spinning heel kick, which he falls out of the ring doing it and hits the cameraman at one point. That was nice, at least.
That looked nice, actually. It did look nice.
Back in the ring, Quang with a standing axe kick. No spin and Rooney, unfortunately. We have a Jack Tunney decision incoming on the tag team titles that Sean basically advocated at Survivor Series. And Jack Tunney, who has not been seen in months.
That comes for the end of the night, doesn't it? We have a message from Tunney. I don't think it was from Tunney because I don't remember hearing the word furthermore.
I think they just made it up personally. I think Tunney's like incarcerated or something.
And they're just covering for it. I would like some more slop.
Furthermore, here's 5 cigarettes. I would like a back rub now, please. Thank you. Jack Tunney's like one of the bloofs. So Scott Taylor misses a crossbody. Quang kicks his head off. Fink announces Quang the winner in a rather sour tone because he's mad at Harvey for humiliating him. I care about none of this.
I just don't get why this is what we're pushing. I'm just.
Sid, how do you feel about Harvey versus Howard?
It doesn't make any sense at all. I don't get it, and I don't understand why they're pushing it so hard, because I don't want to see it. Like, who wants to see Howard Finkel wrestle freaking Harvey Whippleman, the guy who dressed in a freaking woman's dress? I will never forget that.
Oh, you have no idea what's to come.
Dear
Tom, wait till January.
Well, now I have to be on.
I don't know. This is sort of a put women and children to bed kind of situation here.
Oh boy.
Because it is a gimmick match that these two have, and it's not a visually pleasant one either.
I'm scared.
We'll get there when we get there, unfortunately, Tom. We may need to bring John on for that one.
I was hoping you'd say that.
as a reminder to John that it could always be worse.
I think sometimes we all need a little halcyon reminder that, you know what, the world is not. It could be a lot worse. And I think making John watch that will make you feel a lot better. We haven't really utilized John this week, so I'd like to publicly ask John to Photoshop a dragon.
You and your dragon.
Just any way you like, because I'm very aware that this week it's a bit of a fallow week for John Eiley, our Photoshop king. But just a dragon any way you like, mate. That'd be nice.
I say have Tom's dragon and then Photoshop a husky in there for me.
Ah, there you go, a dragon and a husky. Justin, any more?
Now I'm sure we'll come up with something as we go along here, because this next bit I'm looking at right here, I have a Photoshop idea just based on what I wrote.
Oh, okie dokie.
So we have a plug for Action Zone. Now, we had the plug for Raw, which was Doink versus Backlund. Is Raw not the A show, Tom?
It should be, yes.
But you want to know what Action Zone's getting?
Go on, then.
They're getting Owen Hart versus Lex Luger.
Oh, what?
Not just any Lex Luger, because Todd informs us that while Owen is the King of Hearts, Lex Luger is, and I'm quoting here, the King of Pain.
That is the laziest nickname for him. The laziest nickname.
That's what you call yourself when you're playing Street Fighter in the backyard. I'm the king of pain. like I'm the death devil. And Luger in his promo promises to make Owen into the Queen of Hearts. He's going to rip his schwans off during this match. Tune in Sunday at noon to see Owen Hart get dismembered.
I think Action Zone's... If I had to have either Doink and Owen or Luger and... Doink and Backlund or Luger and Owen, I would rather the latter than the former.
Well, Backlund's going to sell us on that match later, so don't worry.
The Queen of Hearts comment, though, doesn't age well, does it?
No, it does not.
Really? Luger saying, I'm going to make you the Queen, it does not age well.
You couldn't make that insult today.
Mm.
You really could not. And here to pick the show back up is Jerry Lawler, King's Court, because he has a special guest, which has been teased all night. We don't know who this guest is going to be. It's going to be his greatest guest ever. I'm hoping it was Lou Gianfrida from that Bob Backlund bit. But it is not. It is indeed Shawn Michaels. But before we get to that, I got to say, Lawler did have one really good insult to the audience. Talking about some shall we say, rotund woman in the crowd who enjoys soap operas, like One Life to Live. This her show should be One Life to Eat. All right, that was pretty funny, actually. Come on, that was...
I liked it.
Cut him some slack here. Because, yes, it's... Lawler gets a good one once in a while.
Speaking of stuff you can't say anymore.
Yes. That
is Jerry Lawler.
Here he is.
Well, he didn't say ramen noodle moonsault, at least. So, talks about how Shawn was Diesel's guiding light. Shawn feigns modesty in a way that only Shawn can. Mm-hmm. He makes some bad jokes about how dumb Diesel is. Now we're going back to the C material here. Shawn talks about how he plucked Diesel from obscurity, or WCW, same thing. He makes it clear that he made Diesel a champion, while somebody in the crowd holds up a Diesel is the true champion sign on perforated computer paper, because this is 1994.
Now, I love the effort of that. Like, you know, that would have taken ages to get printed off and sorted.
Yeah, 15 minutes to print while you're playing Jez Ball.
Yeah, exactly. You know, Earth keep yourself chips. Ticking over with Minesweeper.
Chips challenge. We cut to a dad in the front row chanting Diesel along with his kid. That guy is awesome. He was into it. And Shawn vows to disassemble Diesel because he built him, and by God, he can break him down. This was a great promo from Shawn.
Shawn Michaels is the saving grace of the new generation era, and it's just one of those things where you look at that. You look, it's almost like the Randy Savage problem, in the sense that you look at the roster and you go, here is a guy that you should just put the world into, and they do eventually, but it takes them a while.
Shawn is just so reliable at this point.
Mm.
For all, he may have been an asshole, he may have been an egomaniac, he may have played politics. But this was a man who deserved every good thing he got in wrestling, just for how great he was.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Sid, are you a fan of Shawn at this point?
At this point, yes. He's very entertaining on commentary. His promos are fantastic, and he's a very fantastic wrestler. So he's had some falters during the night, but obviously everyone has falters. I think he should have had the strap put to him and shot up into the stratosphere, but that's just me.
You make it sound almost malicious. Strap him in, blast him into the stratosphere.
I'm saying his push.
I'm going straight to the moon!
John, Shawn Michaels strapped to a rocket, thank you.
Actually, John, I want Thomas Ralph Crandon to the moon, Sydney.
I was being Cameron Grimes, but I guess I'll be Ralph Cramden as well.
You're more Ralph Cramden-ish.
Vince McMahon will love Cameron Grimes when he sees him.
Well, he would love Ralph Cramden more because he gets that.
No, I know, but I think if Vince heard Cameron Grimes saying, "I'm going straight to the moon," Vince is like, "I love it! Modern comedy!
Let's make him a space band."
Make him a space... No, Vince, no! Don't make him a spaceman!
Oh, just you wait.
Oh, no, we were doing so well.
But on a serious topic, discussion of Sean's promo and just how great he is, someone brought up recently how when Hall and Nash went to WCW in 96, they took this redneck company. They came into there, and they came off like the coolest, most pop culture savvy guys in the world. And how it was like a paradigm shift in that sense also, because, you know, here's the NASCAR country music of pro wrestling, and here's two guys who are savvy, who are cool, who openly get that across. And here you have their click buddy, Shawn Michaels, who is, by God, the most fresh thing on this entire show, on a show where Jarrett's wearing tinsel, on a show where you have Puerto Rican guys playing ninjas, on a show where, well, you'll see this next match, you have Harvey feuding with Howard Finkel. You're plugging Backlund versus Doink. And here is Shawn just so far above the din. And without even trying, he makes that clear. It's like, you need Shawn on the show every week. Just to clean out the stink. To clean out the musk.
If you've got an opinion, come out and say it. Don't hold back.
You can't hold it back anymore. I'm going to say it, Tom. Sean's great. Everybody else sucks.
It is. Do you know what? I can't fault you on that. There is a chasm between Sean and other people. If there was a tier list of the new generation era, you've got Sean in lovely, 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 and everybody else in the bin.
Yes. Everyone's like at the bottom of the cliff. Sean's just hanging out up there having a Capri Sun. It'll become very painfully evident during the 95 Rumble match, that distance that we've just discussed. Speaking of NASCAR or something vaguely close to it, we have Bob Holly race footage from the Snowball Derby that we talked about last week. Vince, we don't actually see anything other than just like B-roll, but Vince tells us, well, Bob hit the wall, but he's okay and he'll be back next season.
Yeah, Vince was really casual about the fact that Bob Holly had a car crash.
Well, it's almost like when Boss Man got hanged at Mania 15 and Cole was sad for all 5 seconds. Well, coming up next, ladies and gentlemen, while Boss Man's still hanging there.
The man is still hanging. Well, we've got to crack on with the main event.
The World Wrestling Federation, where one can't grieve forever. Bob wouldn't wanted the show to go on, even though he's alive.
I wouldn't. He would. Ignore him. No, I want you to stop the show. No.
Take a week off, Jesus Christ. Bob wants to go on with Howard versus Harvey.
I want it put on record here that obviously I'm dying at 36, which is now. So any minute now, I'm away. When I die, I want a day of mourning. I want everything to stop. So if you carry on working saying it's what Tom would have wanted, I am categorically saying now, no, it is not what I want. There is evidence of me saying that.
Are you saying that if you die, I don't have to do anything?
You don't have to do anything for a whole day, mate.
That sounds fair.
There you go. You're welcome. Okay. Sid, I want you to mourn as well. I want you to mourn my passing.
Absolutely. If it ends up being a day where I have classes, I won't go.
I want you to thank you, and I want you to cry lots.
Dude, I will cry so much.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Dude, I can't fake it.
No, you have to, mate. Fake it. I don't care. I want everyone to feel
Justin,
sad.
Learn from a celebrity.
Yeah, exactly. Sydney's a famous person in America. If you just say Sydney
anywhere.
I know
how to fake cry.
Yeah, exactly. She knows how to do a massive fake cry. She did it on all those celebrity fun reels. Funerals, as they sometimes call them.
Fun reels?
They're called funerals because they're fun and real.
That's not how you spell it.
Fun and real.
Well, you're unreal.
It is in my
you're
house.
You're unreal.
Unreal tournament.
Speaking of,
I've been awake for 12 hours now. Can you tell?
I certainly can. speaking of unreal, this next bit, this encapsulates in a nutshell what this era was all about. We have poor Lord Alfred Hayes, who is still employed here. I bet you didn't know that. Poor Lord Alfred, narrating a promo for the 100th episode of WWF Mania. No 100th Raw ad. Episode of Raw. Well, I guess not, because we're not quite at 100 yet. But it's such an embarrassing ad involving pies to the face and Todd being goofy. And they have Lord Alfred doing his masterpiece theater diction for it. Now, while the pie throw at the end was nice, this is just, who is your audience? You go from Heidi Fleiss earlier to this. Who are you marketing to?
Everyone, Justin.
I guess we're going to. I guess it does, you know, transcend bounds and generations and races.
Look,
and creeds Vince, and colors
Vince
and
was
genders.
The original demo god.
Here's the demo clod. Because what demo is watching this? They're all watching football. And then we get... I'm sorry. I just thought of the visual for this and I just started laughing. We have a promo video for Hakushi.
Oh, this is awful.
You need
everything
a tissue.
About this finishes off Hakushi before he's even walked through the door.
Okay, so... Jinsei Shinzaki's coming in to play Hakushi. Hakushi is going to be a dynamic character. Well, wrestler more than character. Just a great high flyer. He does stuff that nobody on this roster does, not even the 1-2-3 kid. He's going to be fantastic. Of course they screw it up, but he's going to look great. His character is like this mysterious sort of silent monk type who dresses like Raiden from Mortal Kombat, which is very big at the time. And, to hype his debut, they show this generic shot of a bright sunny day with some clouds in the sky, blue skies, and all of a sudden the clouds start turning threatening. The sky turns dark, clouds turn stormy, and the words Hakushi appear on the screen. Word Hakushi appears on the screen, and that's it. This was the second Mr. Plow ad. Dad, was that your commercial? I don't know.
I get a Simpsons reference.
Yay, we have a breakthrough.
But Shawn Michaels here. Shawn Michaels here.
But first, John, I want Hakushi marveling at how bad that ad was. Hakushi, was that your debut vignette? I don't know.
Followed by a snow globe smashed with the words Hakushi in it.
but then Hakushi sees Henry Godwin on Forbidding Widow's Peak. Or Mabel, whichever. Because Plow King Mabel.
Oh, Christ. Oh, God. Good grief.
We have accidentally made the show more entertaining. Absent-mindedly, sort of out-of-body experience, but that's how it works. So, yes, you're saying about Sean.
Sean.
I believe it was Sid.
Sid, what did Shawn Michaels do here?
Sean just kept on saying, like, oh, Vince, do you need a tissue? It's like, what? Do you need a tissue? He goes, we got the debut of Hakushi. God bless you.
Which Bill Alfonso later stole for ECW.
Just tramples all over his debut.
Like, you just made that him into a joke immediately, just because his name sounds like a sneeze.
Well, after that debut vignette, how could you not?
The debut vignette was crap, but then Sean saying "bless you," just buries the guy before he's even walked through the door.
Alan Sean Austin.
Sean is the kid at the back of the class who's just not having any of this.
Yeah. He's really not, is he?
And you know what? I can't blame him.
Yeah, I get it. Like, Sean is us watching this, but I think it's almost... And I get it that he's real, and he's one that's pointed out, Vince, this is all crap, right? That's basically what he's doing tonight. Vince, this is all crap.
Sean,
you don't
Sean
need that on the show.
Sean was the original voice of the voiceless.
He was dropping pipe bombs consistently on Monday Night Raw in 1994.
And this next match, well, this next match could use a little bit of detonation to it. Well Done versus the Bushwhackers.
Oi.
All right, Gabbo. This next match might have been the... Now, I want to say I've seen worse, but I don't know if I actually have. Should I just read my notes verbatim so we can speed through this?
I would love you to read your notes, sir.
Yes.
Okay. If at any point you want to comment on something that I have said, by all means. This is my entire stream of consciousness thoughts for this match. Harvey abuses Howard again. Yep, it's 1994 and they're building to Harvey versus Howard. Whackers are still over, at least. Comedy double clothesline spot. Luke is facing peril already. You got to see Stephen Dunn's backbreaker. Oh, yes, that I got to comment on. Stephen Dunn gave Luke a backbreaker that was mildly just a put down and drop. I don't know what happened there, but it was not a backbreaker in the academic sense. Continuing. Tournament for the belts. Hopefully these two teams aren't in it. Vince talked uninterrupted for at least 90 seconds. Sean buries Well Done's outfits, as he should. They're wearing thongs over singlets. Well's lightning leg drops are great. They were. Timothy Well can do a great leg drop. Sean plugs Tom Hanks big. I'm glad that sentence ended there. John, don't draw anything ever.
John, never Photoshop that ever.
Ko-Fi will never want to lay it back on. Well, spamming the leg drops. Leg drop city. Ugly clothesline from Luke. Butch gets lukewarm tag and goes ape. Well eats the ram. John, don't draw that. Harvey trips Butch and Dunn wins with a knee to the back. Finkel tries stooging off the heels to no avail. We go to break during Harvey Howard stare down. That's all you need to know.
That is, the one bit that we should probably mention a little bit more on is Jack Tunney's declaration regarding the tag team titles that came during this match.
Tunney says, I'm not going to rule the night. I'm just going to watch Raw. Then this match comes on. All right, let me get on the phone and get out of the room for a few minutes. I wouldn't blame him. This match was awful.
We're getting a tag team title tournament. And
yes,
I, for the life of me, can't look forward to this tournament at all. Because I thought, what tag teams are there available to do a full-on tournament? And Bushwhackers and Well Done.
Should I tell you who the teams were?
Yeah, because I've written down Bushwhackers, Well Done, Head Shrinkers, and a combo of the Million Dollar Corporation. But go on, give us who we've got.
Okay, well, you may have missed a few teams here because you missed the Smoking Guns, although they're not in it because I think one of them was hurt at the time.
Mm-hmm.
That would have been a decent team to have. All right, here are your teams. Bam Bam Bigelow and Tatanka. Men on a Mission.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Mo is back now. The Head Shrinkers of Fatu and Sione. Owen Hart and Jim Neidhart. The Heavenly Bodies. The Bushwhackers. 1-2-3 Kid and Bob Holly. And Well Done.
There you go. That's not as bad as I thought it would be. But it's certainly... At least there is something that... I'm desperately trying to defend this. There is a division...
Yes.
I can't defend it because Men on a Mission's in it.
Oh, that's true.
You will show Mo respect.
It's my gimmick, dude.
Okay, fine. It's this isn't quite the Bulldogs and the Hearts and the Rockers, is it?
No.
This tag team wrestling has hit a strong nadir. It's needs more Butcher and the Blade and the Dark Order.
Hey.
Dude, Vince would have loved the Butcher in 94.
He would have done, I'd wouldn't he? Him. Oh, God, he would have made him champion, wouldn't he? Gone, oh, great, a budget Stan Hansen. Get in.
And then he would have ruined it.
Of course.
But a Stan Hansen from a metal band. Can you picture Stan Hansen and Pantera? Wouldn't that be great?
If only there was somebody John? That could bring that image to life.
John? I want Stan Hansen as Phil Anselmo.
Tom and I thinking the same thing.
What do you say, you yellow belly? This is a mouthful of chew at the back of singing walk. Actually, that'd be awesome.
John, don't make the song, though, because I don't want you getting a warning from Twitter again like you did for our Adele cover.
Hans Terra. So, after that barn burner of a match, and we go to Sean interviewing Bob Backlund at the end of the show. This almost redeemed the entire broadcast. Because poor Backlund has to plug his match with Doink. He tells us that it's going to be a real axiom. Yes, he said axiom for some reason. Because Backlund never liked clowns. And Sean keeps going, yeah, after every sentence, just trying to ham this up.
He's the hype man.
Exactly. Sean's like Leo Rush. Johnny, if you want to do Bob Backlund and Sean as Bobby Lashley and Leo Rush, then you do you. Well, if Lashley had Backlund's gimmick, he'd be even more interesting, I think. Backlund vows to exterminate Doink because he hates clowns. Boy, this has got dark.
It really did, didn't it?
He's going to bring our morality up to God's level. He's going to kill Doink to get us there. This was accidentally a great promo.
It was good. It was good. I still don't want to see Doink versus Backlund, but the promo was good.
Even after that promo, you don't want to see it? So that's how the show goes off the air.
And that is how we end Monday Night Raw for this week. It was, this is the beginning of the downward spiral now, isn't it?
We're well into that. We're into the nosedive. The controls were jammed. we're just hoping for like a nice soft cornfield to land in. That's our only hope.
The thing is that this has been such a middle of the road episode of Raw that. Strumowitz doesn't even have a song for it.
No, he's. I said, hey, you got anything when you watch the show? And he's like, no.
He's like, I've really got nothing. I've tried everything.
So we put Strumowitz in the field. He's having a fallow week. So he's growing new crops for the next one.
Yes, hopefully he can use Backlund and Doink to conjure something up.
In fact,
no guarantees.
He'll be able to.
In fact, Sydney, do you want to sing a song about this episode of Raw?
Oh, dear, no.
Thought I'd ask. in fact, we are taking a fallow week in general. So you're hearing this on the 8th of August. And then we're changing the schedule a little bit in terms of when we record the podcast. So therefore, we're missing next week and we're back the week after. So we're having a fallow week too. So... don't miss us too much while we're away. We'll be back with Strumowitz. And do you know what? What's really exciting is we are now less than 15 weeks away from our 100th episode.
Mm.
100th episode coming up before the end of the year. Is that right?
I almost can't believe it.
I know. 100 weeks of hanging out with you, Justin. Has it been lovely?
Well, it's more than 83 weeks, isn't it?
Yeah, that's longer than Bischoff's run on the top.
I think we are ahead of it now, officially. Although Bischoff was great on Dynamite this week.
Oh, wasn't he just? Really loved him on Dynamite.
I haven't liked you for 22 years. It's been 24 and I know exactly how you feel.
But hey, look, we can't talk about that. We have to, because that's not why we're here. We have to stay in the doldrums of 1994. But thankfully, we are done for the time being. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time. I'd like to thank Sydney Zumowitz for joining us on the show today.
Thank you for having me. My birthday's next week.
Well, a happy flipping birthday for next week to you.
Yep, I turned 21.
Oh, what an age.
Our gift to you is going to be putting your name in the clouds as they turn threatening.
Yeah!
Happy birthday to Zumowitz. Bless you.
Bless you.
So happy birthday to Sydney Zumowitz, who is now just as old as one of my kidney stones. And Justin Henry, have you got a birthday next week?
Not for 3 more months, no.
Oh, well, never mind. We'll set it. We'll party like it's your birthday. We'll sit.
I'm putting in the clouds anyway, Mister.
Until then, if you can't look up to the cloud, she is at SAZoomer4 on Twitter. Is that right?
Yep, that's right.
Get in. He is at JRHWriting on Twitter. I'm at Tom Campbell on Twitter. Together, we are at Cultaholic on Twitter. Don't forget to join us. Write something offensive in the clouds. I love you, bye.
Hey, I'm ready. Right foot back.
Begins with a U and ends with an A. Has a meal dish out there.
Monday Night Raw, number one. All right.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.